Let's do this.
A Roth IRA is a great place to start because when you take it out later, it'll be tax-free. You might be like, oh, I don't have an extra $20 or an extra $100. But as soon as you start doing it, you don't even miss it.
On point.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of On Point. I'm your host, Taylor Burke, and today we are talking about something we have never touched on in this podcast. So I'm really excited to welcome founder and CEO of Your Tax Coach. She is a tax strategist, accounting expert, and a business coach with tons of experience in finance, all the way from working in international tax and venture capital at a Big Four accounting firm to working with local and regional accounting firms. She helps business owners and high net worth individuals save on taxes while also growing their profits. Give a warm welcome to Barbara Shreehans. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom and insight on all things money.
Always.
Well, I'm really excited to dive into the money mindset that you are totally known for. Who doesn't want to learn how to save money? And any person listening to this is going to take away either some tax tips or that money mindset.
Totally. Can't wait.
So let's start from the beginning with you. I know you have an incredible journey and story, and I know you've been so open and honest about your upbringing. So with your parents, they were addicts growing up and you witnessed them having money issues such as foreclosures, bankruptcies, and credit card debt. Do you think growing up in that environment made you hyper aware of money?
Yeah, for sure. It was just always so unstable. And I remember thinking, like, even when I was like 7, I was like, I don't think it should be like this. Like, it is like this, but I don't know if it should be, or that I don't have to have it be that way.
Right.
And so I knew from like a really young age, I wasn't going to live my life like that. And thank goodness, because it like kind of catapulted into my adulthood in terms of being able to save money and grow money and all of that.
How did you learn that? Since like that wasn't around you in your childhood, did you go out of your way to research it? Like, how did you know what was right and what was wrong?
Good question. Really, I just knew what was wrong. Like my parents go through bankruptcies and getting their house foreclosed on. I knew that that's what I didn't want, but I didn't necessarily know what I did want. Other than growing up, the Kardashians were like super popular and I loved watching that show. And I would be like, see, life doesn't have to be like the way that I'm living it. These people get to live a certain way. Like, what's stopping anyone or everyone from living that way?
So then how did you do it?
Well, when I went to college and after graduating, I had a ton of student loan debt. My parents obviously couldn't save for college. So I paid for my own undergrad and grad school with a lot of student loans and a lot of credit cards. And I had my oldest kiddo when I was still in college and I was paying for daycare on a credit card. And so honestly, after graduation, I was in so much debt. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm doing what my parents did with money. You know, I mean, I was never like an addict or anything, but I could see their money patterns. And I was like, I don't want this for my kids. And so I really focused on, instead of budgeting, I don't like that word and I feel like it's very restrictive. So instead of really like budgeting and cutting out $7 lattes, I'm just going to make more money. Even though at the time I was working like in corporate and public accounting at other accounting firms, I was like, well, what can I do to just make more money? And so I had a ton of side hustles and a ton of, you know, different things that I did to kind of get myself out of debt. After years and years of doing that, then I could finally start slowly investing. And during that time I was getting out of debt, I just read a ton of books about money, about investing, about money mindset. And so like when I finally did have an extra $20 a month is what I really started with to invest, I knew what to do with it.
Wow. I guess my question is, well, actually I have two questions for you. One, I want to know about like the books you started reading. Like I'm really interested in that. But two, you said you had an extra $20 a month to invest. Where did you find out like where you wanted to invest your money? And is $20 like enough to start?
So I started with just reading articles. We'd subscribe to like Money and Business and just start reading articles about like how people were building wealth. And then that sparked my curiosity for books. And honestly, I don't remember like the first books I was reading, but I would definitely suggest Rich as Fuck. It's really like Rich AF. That's a really good money mindset book. And Happy Money, I think, is also a really great intro. And Rich Dad, Poor Dad is also a good one. But to your question on like, is $20 enough? Like, totally. So when I first started, I think I downloaded the app Acorns. It's just like a stock platform, essentially. $5 a week is what I was doing. You put in just like how old you are, and it'll put it in like the riskiest accounts if you're young and less risky as you get older. And so it would just like take $5 out of my account every week, and it just invests it for you. I still use it today at more than $5 a week, but that's what I started with because that's all I could afford. And honestly, the compounding interest is crazy. Like, just start. That would be my biggest advice. You might be like, oh, I don't have an extra $20 or an extra $100. But as soon as you start doing it, you don't even miss it.
So with this app, Acorn, you put $5 in, and are you able to like lose that, or you always have that $5?
Yeah, it's just like investing in any of the stock market. You know, it could go down. And like last year was a little bit tough on the stock market, but still overall, my account is making money because it averages year over year. Mm-hmm. So of course, like with any investment, it could go down. But if you're young, even though we might have a few tough years last year, maybe this year or the coming years, you know, everyone's talking about a recession, who knows what will happen. But even if it does go down, honestly, that's like the best time to invest, right? Because then the biggest gain you will get is when the economy starts turning around, because that's where the biggest gains are, is right after a recession. So if you start investing now, then, you know, if things do go sideways, eventually they'll turn around.
Totally. But how do you know like what to invest in? How did you choose which one you did?
Yeah. So at least for Acorns, they're all funds. So they basically just pick a fund for you. I just let it pick it for me because it was like, oh, you're young. You just put it in like the riskiest ones that will make the most money. Obviously, you could lose the most money with it because it's risky. So I think it knows based on your age. So it's not one where like you pick, oh, I just want Apple or just want Google or something like that. It puts it in a fund, which actually like minimizes your risk because it's a pool of different companies all together. So if one company does bad, but one does good, you know, it kind of evens itself out.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, I feel like that's a good start for anyone that's looking to like try to get into it. I know I'll have to download that today.
Yeah, it's so easy. And I think it costs like $1 a month.
That's awesome. Something that I do want to talk to you about is like increasing our income. Do you have any insight of how we can set intentions daily to increase our income?
I love starting out the day with gratitude first, before even like working on goals or like increasing your money or wealth goals or anything like that. I think you really have to be in a state of gratitude for the universe or spirit or whatever you believe in to really give that back to you. Mm-hmm. I would say like write down 5 things you're grateful for. And then I go into 10 goals that I have, which might sound like a lot, and they don't have to just be about money. Like I think maybe 1 or 2 of mine are about money, but some of my goals would be like, I have my dream house. And I always write it in the tense of like, I have it now, not I'm going to have it or I will have, but like I have it now. And so like, it could be like, I have the best circle of friends. And I always write down, I am the most patient person in the world because I'm always working on trying to be more patient. So just like overall goals. And then of course, a couple of them could be money or wealth related.
So you would say like, start with that, the gratitude, and then you manifest it.
Yeah. So gratitude and then writing down your goals. But then of course, just writing them down isn't going to magically bring the 10K a month or whatever your goal is that you're striving for. You have to still take some inspired action, but just the act of writing it down brings you aware of what you're striving for and kind of sparks that action of, oh, right, I do want 10K a month. So I need to go out and do XYZ.
Before we get too far ahead, I do want to kind of know about how you made your own business, your tax coach. So you were working for an accounting firm. How did you branch off into do your own thing?
So I had my son in junior year and I went to my career counselor because I was like, I'm pregnant and I don't know what to do. And I'm kind of freaking out. Tell me what I need to major in that like on the day I graduate, I'm going to have a job. And at the time I was in marketing and they were like, well, don't do marketing. And they were like, you should probably do accounting. I was like, really? Are you sure? Man, that sounds boring. But that's what I changed my major to. It was business with a concentration in accounting. And then my master's is in taxation. So I started at the number one accounting firm in the world.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fun. I was like super pregnant when I was interviewing. So I was like, they're totally not going to give it to me because they just see this pregnant girl in college. Maybe they felt bad for me. They hired me. So when I started there after my master's program, I was like, this is the number one accounting firm. Like, it's not all it's cracked up to be, you know? They make you work a million hours a week and you're not getting paid anything. And you don't really learn that much either because it's such a big company that like you're kind of pigeonholed into these different departments. And so I quickly got out of there. My manager that was there left and he recruited me to another smaller firm. And I just kept like moving firms, even though I did really well and I would always advance. I was still like, there has to be something better. Like these people aren't really helping companies with their taxes and they're not really like communicating with them very well. They're not coaching them or consulting them or helping them throughout the year. It's literally just like all about filing forms during tax season. And so after 10 years of looking, I think I was at like 5 or 6 different accounting firms. It was like between Christmas and New Year's or right before Christmas, I had saved this client like over $1 million in taxes at this last firm that I was working at. And I was like, wow, you know, the accounting firm got the largest check they've ever received for this work. And, you know, maybe I'll get a bonus for doing all that. And I didn't. The owner of the firm emailed me and said, you get to beat that next year. And I was just like crying because at the time I was still trying to pay off my debt, you know, and like the bonus would have really helped. I was the one that did all the work.
Yeah.
I was like crying to my husband about it. And he was like, well, if that client was your client, how much would they have paid you? And I was like, well, I guess the same. And he's like, so why don't you start your own? And I literally had never thought about starting my own business until then. I don't know why. I think like in college, you know, they just teach you like the corporate track. Like 10 days later, your tax code started.
Oh my gosh. So you just like, did you put in like a 2-week notice?
It was good timing because that was like Christmas and my husband's military or was military. And so we were moving to across the U.S. I had asked to work remotely, which they let me do. So I still stayed there for like 6 months as I was starting my business because I was too scared to go like all in, you know, and then started the company. It just really took off. And then I quit.
That's amazing. Actually, we had someone on not too long ago who works with entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs. And he said exactly what you're saying. He said, actually, you should be doing that. You should never just quit your job when you want to start a business, that you should actually work up to it and still work with your job and do it as like a side hustle until you have enough income or more income than your actual job.
Yeah, I think that is the best way. Like for me, I just couldn't take that kind of risk. But I do think for some people, like the cutoff works really well for them because otherwise keeping their job is like a crutch and isn't allowing them to like really go all in. And so I think it can work both ways. It just kind of depends on your personality.
Totally. And I bet you never looked back.
No. Oh my gosh. We started January 10th, 2020. And, you know, COVID was 2 months later. But honestly, that's what really grew the business is because during that time, I was posting on social media. Like I knew how to get the PPP loans for business owners and EIDL loans. And so business owners would come needing help for that. And then they would tell all their friends like, hey, Barbara knows how to help you get that. And so we got a ton of people in our pipeline, maybe not for taxes at the time, but we were helping them. And so they told all their friends and then eventually like, because their business made it through COVID, then they needed us for taxes.
What are some of the lies that we were told growing up that revolves around money? And like, how are you trying to change that today?
I think everyone hears different ones. And I love asking people about them on our podcast. You could have had a really amazing upbringing and your parents were wealthy, but like they still have money issues too, you know, just different ones than, you know, maybe someone that was in poverty and like, people had no money. But I think really common ones are like, money is the root of all evil. You know, we heard that in church if you are religious, but I think it just comes down to like asking yourself, is that really true? Because most of the people I know that make a lot of money give back a lot of money. And so is money really the root of all evil, or is it who is using it? That's a big one. A lot of times we probably heard like, no, you can't have that toy. We can't afford it. We don't have money, things like that. But like those little comments to your kids really impact them. And so really just thinking about the way that you talk to your kids about money. So like instead for our kids, instead of saying like, no, you can't have that, or it's not that we don't have money, we just tell them that's not how we're choosing to spend our money today. Or if it's like a toy or something that they really want right then, as all kids do, it's like, well, if you buy this now, it's going to take longer for you to actually get the real thing that you want. You know, maybe a computer or an iPad has been on your goal list. And so if you buy this one toy, you're going to have to wait a month longer to get your iPad. And so instead of the I can't, or I won't, or anything like that, just like reframing what you're saying.
Why do you think that that's so important that we don't say that?
I think it kind of gets interpreted when you're a kid as like, oh, I don't deserve that. Or you have this mindset of like, wow, my parents don't have money. And so it causes worry and stress and anxiety around money when if you just reword it a different way, it's like, oh, that makes sense. Yeah, I don't need it right now. I'm going to get it later.
Right. And then you know what? The thing about kids too is that they do end up forgetting about it an hour later. I'm sure you hear this one all the time. And you saying the money's the root to all evil reminded me of money can't buy happiness. What are your thoughts on that one?
I don't know that I have an answer, because sometimes I'm like, well, money doesn't make you happy. Sure. And I do think like I bought the nice things and a day later, it's like, well, I don't feel any different, you know, because of this Louis Vuitton bag or, you know, the nice car or whatever. But I do think that money can make things easier. And it can buy ease and can de-stress a lot of things in your life. So I struggle with that one.
So maybe not happiness, but easiness?
Yeah.
Okay. Self-limiting beliefs. How do we work through them and goals to set for yourself to get there? Hey, have you heard about Vagaro? It's the best place to book hair appointments, facials, and even workout classes. They have a huge marketplace where you can find local beauty, wellness, and fitness businesses that fit your exact needs. Plus, with the Vagaro app, you can book services and classes whenever, wherever. Who knows? Your new favorite self-care business could be a simple search away. Download the Vagaro app. That's V-A-G-A-R-O to get started today.
We'll use the like worthiness example, because I think a lot of people have a hard time with that one, myself included. But it's like, again, writing it down. Same with money mindset issues. It's like awareness is first to like write down the thing that you're going through. So if it's worthiness, you can write down like, why do I think I'm not worthy of X? And you can write that out, but then write, is that really true? And then you can write all of the reasons why you are worthy of whatever thing. And it's just like repetition, consistency, reprogramming your mind. But like the first thing is becoming aware of it. I think most people don't even know the things that are limiting themselves, whether it's confidence, self-confidence, worthiness, anxieties about different things, guilt, shame. And so I think it's just like being honest with yourself, becoming aware and writing through it.
Yeah. Would you also say too, working through maybe your goals, actually breaking it down? Like I know I'm using the example you said earlier, like I want to have my dream house. Would you maybe even think like breaking it down, like move to that city or like sub goals or subtasks to that?
Totally. I mean, the smaller the stepping stone, the easier it is for you to believe it. So if you're trying to change like a limiting belief, you create smaller tasks. It works really well too with money. I can use a money example. So say like, I feel like people throw out arbitrary numbers all the time. They're like, I want to make $1 million a year, but you can't just like write that down and it happen. So you really have to break that down. So what is that a month? It's like 83,000 a month. And so break down the million to 83. And what is that a day? So you need to make X a day. So maybe just saying I'm going to be a millionaire this year is harder for you to believe. But if you write down, I need to make 3,000 a day, that's a lot easier of a stepping stone. And you just like make smaller steps.
That totally makes sense. And also it makes it more achievable. I also, not to pivot, I just opened up my first savings account and I'm like, I probably should have started that a lot sooner, but just because I'm just really don't know where to begin. What is some advice that you can give others about savings accounts? So I did do a high yield savings account.
Say you bank at like, I don't know, one of the big banks like Chase or something. If you just open a savings account with them, they're probably going to give you like a 0.01 interest rate. It's like nothing. You earn like pennies on thousands of dollars. So you might think like, oh, I'm earning an interest rate. But like if you really looked at the end of the year, you're making nothing. And really your money is going down because of inflation. So your money's not worth as much. But if you open a high yield savings account, my favorite's American Express, then they usually, like right now, they're going from anywhere from like 3.75% to 4.5%. And so you're literally getting like a 4,000x on your interest income that you're earning on the high yield savings account versus just a basic interest account.
And do these banks make money off that? Like, I guess I'm kind of confused that why banks would do this. So that we're putting our money into their savings account or our savings account. And then banks are like, okay, well, because you're banking with us, I'm going to give you money.
Oh, they're making so much money off your money because they're lending out your money to other people. And, you know, business loans are going to be at 12, 20, 30% sometimes, and they're only giving you 3.5 or 4%. And so, you know, you put in 10 grand, they're going to loan out your 10 grand to someone else for a way higher interest rate, and they're going to make a ton of money, and then they'll only give you 3.5%.
Technically, our money's still there.
It's actually not there. It's kind of creepy if you think about it. Someone else is using it. And you just hope that when you take it out, the money's there in the ATM.
Has that ever happened where like you go and it's
not? Yeah. You know, when banks go under and if it's not FDIC insured, you know, you'll see those placards on ATMs or banks that'll say like FDIC insured. And what if you read the small print, it's saying, you know, your bank accounts here are insured up to $250,000, which means if the bank goes under, the FDIC supposedly would give you your money back up to $250,000. So I always say like, don't keep more than $250,000 in any one bank, because if it goes under, that's all you're insured for. But there's also a lot of banks out there that are not FDIC and people don't even know it. So check and see that your bank is covered by the FDIC.
That's good to know, because the bank that I chose, I went with them because they had a high yield saving, but it's just online banking. Like I can't actually go in person. So, I mean, I don't even know if they are. So we're going to switch gears to tax. We are fast approaching tax season and taxes are universal. Like everyone needs to know this information. And this is like right in your wheelhouse. So anything that you think that we should know about taxes that you want to spill your knowledge on?
I love talking about how business owners can save money in taxes, because really as a business owner, you have the opportunity to save the most amount of money because the Internal Revenue Code is really there for you. People always say like it's 7,000 pages long, the Internal Revenue Code, but only 10 of them tell you what taxes you have to pay. And the other 6,000 whatever pages are there to tell you how to not pay them. And so like use those incentives and use these rules to your advantage, because if you're just a W-2 earner, you don't have the opportunity to save very much in taxes because it's taken out for you already in your paycheck. But as a business owner, the first thing you want to look at is how you're structured. And that could be maybe you're a sole proprietor, so you don't even have an LLC yet. You could have an LLC. And those two, sole proprietor and LLCs, pay the most amount in taxes. And so we always tell people if you're profiting more than $40,000 a year, you probably shouldn't be one of those two things. You should probably be an S corp or a C corp. And really, those two entities, you can save like $20,000 per owner. So if you're a husband, wife, really like $40,000 in taxes. And so the first thing we look at with our clients is how are they structured and what is their profit and what are your goals? Because your goals with your business also matter. You know, are you growing your business to eventually sell it? Because you'll want a different structure than if you're not going to try to sell it. So then once you're structured correctly, then the fun happens of like, let's try to write off everything in your life as a business expense. And how can we relate it to business? Because that's really where the magic happens. It's like, okay, you now have a business and you're taking a trip to Miami for 5 days. Well, the Internal Revenue Code says that 50% of the days have to be for business. So That would be 3 out of the 5 days. And the way there and the way back already count as business if you're going there for business. So that's 2 of the 3 days that you need. So only one of the days when you're there has to be business related. And you could go out and network with people. That would be business. You could meet a client or a prospective client. If anyone can be your client, like that's pretty easy to do. You could have a photo shoot there because you need content for social media or for your website or things like that. And so really it's like trying to turn most of your expenses into business so that you have less profit and then you pay less in taxes.
Do you have to show proof for this? So say if like your third day, hypothetically, you met with a client, would you have to be like, take a photo and submit that? Or like, how would they even know?
Yeah, I mean, everything has to be documented. I tell everyone, we use our Google Calendar, whatever calendar that you like to use, put it on there. So, you know, you would have an event on your calendar that says like the 5-day trip and mark the day that you were networking or marketing or a photo shoot or a board meeting or anything like that. Have it on your calendar. So if in 5 years, the IRS asks you, what were you doing on February 2nd, 2023, you'll easily be able to go back and see what it was. And then keep your receipts as well. So anything that you spend money on, you'll want to keep the receipts or scan them somewhere so you save them.
Saving receipts?
Yeah, you have to save your receipts.
For like how many years?
They say 3 years, like at least, but the IRS can go back up to 7. So I say keep them for 7. You don't have to, but we just have like a box that we throw all of our receipts in, or you can scan them in, whatever is easier for you.
Totally. So that's a good incentive to have as a business owner. You would work with like an accountant to see what you could write off.
Yeah. And I always say like, find a tax strategist, not just an accountant, because most accountants are not like us, where we'll help you figure out how to make things a write-off. Most accountants will just say, no, you can't do that. No, you can't do that, because their only job is to just like pump out tax returns. And they just want to get the forms out as fast as possible because they have thousands of clients during tax season and they just want to get it out and get it over with. So really work with a strategy team where like they're really on your team and on your side. You don't want an accountant that just tells you no all the time. Like that just feels yucky. And then you'll eventually stop wanting to call them or stop wanting to message them because you're like, well, they're just going to tell me no anyways. Right. Instead, like find someone that's coming to you with ideas on how to save and someone that's going to be there for you and on your team.
Okay. That makes so much sense. We were talking about business owners, but what about the consumers that are listening? Are there any little like loopholes of how they can save money during tax season?
So I will say it's like a lot harder to save money in taxes when you get a W-2, but there are still ways. So, you know, maxing out a 401k is one of them because that's pre-tax money. So any money that you put into your 401k doesn't get taxed and it lowers your taxable income. And then we love HSAs, the health savings account. And even if you're not someone that like uses a ton of doctors or goes to the doctor very often, that money can stay in there. First of all, the money you put in there is pre-tax. So you're not taxed on it. Then it will grow tax-free. And then when you take it out, it's tax-free. So it's like this triple like tax savings. And even if you don't use it this year, it keeps accumulating. And then when you are old and you will need a doctor or like some care, that money is there for you. And the burden won't be on your family to have to take care of you. You already have this like built up nest egg. So I love HSAs. FSAs are also really good. Usually people use those for daycare. So if you have little ones, you can put pre-tax money into an account that account pays for the daycare. So it at least saves you a couple thousand bucks on taxes there. And then getting real estate. I mean, if you're a high income W-2 earner and you can buy an investment property, you can save a lot of money in taxes that way too.
Okay. I know like obviously putting money in the 401ks, but what does maxing that out look like?
Yeah. So this year, the max is $22,500. So you can put up to $22,500 per year. The number goes up a bit each year for inflation. You can do that by like taking that $22,000, dividing it by how many paychecks you get in the year. You know, some people are monthly or biweekly or whatever. And so divide that by how many paychecks you're going to get. And that's what's going to come out of your paycheck and into your 401k.
Is it $22,500 from just you? Because I know a lot of businesses also kind of contribute to that 401k. Is it both of the contributions together that equal that? Or is it just your contribution?
Yeah, so both. So a lot of times like businesses will match you like up to 4% or something. And so, you know, maybe your employer puts 4,000 in, so then you could put 18,500.
And what is your advice on paying taxes as it comes out of our paycheck or waiting until like the end of the year to pay it?
So if you are W-2, you have to have your taxes taken out each paycheck. Like there's no getting around that. That's like an IRS rule. But if you're a business owner, you get to wait to pay the taxes either quarterly or annually. It just depends on how much you might owe in taxes. But I'll say a lot of our clients wait, even though they might have to pay quarterly taxes, they wait to pay them until April because the penalty for not paying quarterly taxes is so small that they know if they put their money in a high yield savings account, it's going to make more money than the penalty for not paying quarterly. So they will have made money on their money all year and then pay their taxes in April. Not everyone is comfortable doing that, and that's totally fine. But a lot of our clients are like, I don't want to pay quarterly. I can make more money on my money somewhere else.
What is the difference between like TurboTax, like doing your taxes online versus going to an accountant or a tax strategist like yourself?
TurboTax, I think, has a place, and that would be for like a husband, wife, or like married couple that just had W-2s. Very simple. You're just putting numbers in and it spits out a very easy tax return. I think TurboTax is fine for that. But as a business owner, I don't think anyone should use TurboTax because it doesn't know your business. It doesn't know how you're spending your money. It doesn't know what write-offs you should have or shouldn't have. It doesn't know any of it. All it's asking you is what's your LLC name? What's your income? What's your expenses? But there's nobody there being like, but what about this? Or no, you can't actually do that. Or what about this strategy to help you save money? And so as business owners, I would say never use TurboTax, like always use someone that specializes in business taxes.
Okay. And that kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier when you're working with a strategist also. They can just help you like, hey, didn't you take a trip not so long ago? Like, let's see how we can work that in.
Yeah.
Last thing that I want to talk to you about is IRA. And this is something that I always see on my TikTok and I'm like, what the heck? So I see IRA and then I see Roth IRA. What can you tell us about that?
So an IRA is pre-tax money. So that means you put the money in and you don't have to pay taxes on that money that you're putting in. But at retirement, you're going to pay taxes when you take it out. Whereas a Roth IRA, you will have already paid taxes on it through your paycheck and then you put the money in, but it will grow tax-free. And when you take it out, it's tax-free. It really depends on, okay, at retirement, do I think my taxes are going to be higher than they are now or lower than they are now? A majority of people, their taxes are going to be higher. And I really don't see taxes going down. So I feel like everyone's taxes in like 30 years are going to be higher anyway. So a Roth IRA is a great way and great place to start because when you take it out later, it'll be tax-free. So it's just like a fund that you're putting money into and either a financial advisor will invest it for you or you pick whatever funds you want it to go into the stock market. There's also self-directed IRAs where like you could put it into real estate or crypto or other things. But for a majority of people, it's going into different funds and stocks and things like that. And so you would just set it up at like Fidelity or whatever brokerage that you like using.
And would you suggest that people do that? That's something that you would tell like your clients or consumers like, oh, you should probably look into that.
I love Roth IRAs. I think everyone should have one or most people should have one for sure. And I would say like max out your Roth before a traditional IRA, the other one we were talking about, but you can have both. So if you can, if you have the extra funds, do both. I would just say like when it comes to taxes and money, like don't put it off and don't be afraid to look at it and work on it because the more that you look at your money and where it's going and the more you work on your taxes, like the more you'll save, the more money you'll make. Just work with a really good team.
And can people work with teams even if they don't have a business? Like if they're just W-2 employee, like they can still have a team that kind of like lets them know and helps them?
Totally. Yeah.
Well, Barbara, before I let you go, we're going to play a quick little game. It is called Taylor's Would You Rather. And so I made you 8 Would You Rather questions and I will give you 2 options and you only have 3 seconds to answer.
Love it.
Okay. Number 1, would you rather spend $1 million on travel or $1 million on clothes?
Travel.
Would you rather get $1 million upfront or $100,000 over the course of 10 years?
$1 million upfront.
Would you rather donate your time or donate your money to your favorite charity?
Money.
Would you rather use a debit card for all your purchases the next year or a credit card for all your purchases the next year?
I'm a points whore, so credit card.
Would you rather own 5 investment properties or 3 vacation homes?
5 investment properties.
Would you rather win the lottery but lose all your friends or lose all your money but you find your soulmate?
Oh, but I already have my soulmate. So then the second one.
Okay, 2 more. Would you rather go back in time to fix your biggest money mistake or look into the future to find out where you end up?
Ooh, look into the future.
Okay, last one. Would you rather reveal your salary or rather reveal your weight on national television?
That's a good one. I would rather reveal my salary.
Oh, really? I thought you were going to say weight. Either one, that's so like cringe.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Barbara, so much for taking the time out to come on the podcast, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Our goal is to always give you the content you didn't know you needed to know and to make sure you're always on point. I'm Taylor Burke. Thank you for listening.